Well, for 20 years, I have had what I thought was a lemon tree in a pot. And I thought it was a lemon tree because when I went to the garden store, that is what they said it was. That was its name, a Meyer lemon. And for 20 years, it has been beautiful, very decorative, lovely flowers, beautiful lemons. Was a little stressed out when it came down to Tennessee in the back of Richard's pickup truck, but it regained health and continued to bear fruit. The only thing was that the lemons really didn't taste good. You know, each year I'd cut into one, I think, oh, it's gonna be really good this year, and it just had this off taste. So anyway, the other day, I was in the garden with a woman who's been helping me when we were on vacation in the garden, and I was telling her about how the lemons tasted off. They tasted kind of rancid almost. And I picked, there were about 15 green fruits on the tree, and I picked one, and I scratched the rind. I said, even the rind smells weird. And I scratched the rind, put it to my nose, and I said, oh my goodness, it's a lime. For 20 years, I had waited for my limes to become yellow in order to eat them. So it was amazing. We told our kids that lots of emojis of excitement and the possibilities for these limes. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is because I want to talk this morning about two things that are vitally important, really for our happiness and for our fulfillment. And they are true identity and calling. True identity and calling. The scripture from Exodus about Moses and the burning bush centers on the identity and calling of two characters. One of them is Moses, and one of them, of course, is God. Seems a little irreverent to call God a character, but he actually has deigned to become a character in the scripture. So as an English major, I feel free to call him one of these characters. So what do we know about Moses? He was a Jewish boy. He was born in Egypt in the time when midwives were mandated to kill baby boys. He was saved by his sister Miriam, who made that little boat of reeds for him and put it in the river. He was found by Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him and raised him in the court of Pharaoh. He became a powerful prince and actually the overseer of many slaves, who were, of course, his own Jewish people. And that didn't sit right with him. And in fact, there's a moment when an Egyptian is beating on a slave, and Moses kills that Egyptian and hides him in the sand. And after that, he flees for his life to Midian, which is where we catch up with Moses this morning. So, some possible identifiers for Moses, just a few. A victim, you know, baby born in a hostile environment. A rescued person. A leader, but an oppressor too. A murderer. And a refugee. But are these labels, even if we kept going, are they really sufficient in Moses' self-understanding? Well, no, because in his conversation with God, Moses asks the question, who am I, he says. There's something missing in Moses' knowing of himself, particularly in respect to God's plan, that he was going to do all that stuff about bringing the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt. Who am I to do this? Asks Moses when faced with the living God. And of course, what an important question that is for each of us. Who am I? Howard Thurman has a wonderful way, I think, of speaking into the importance of this question. And I'm going to try and summarize some of what he says about the importance of knowing our true selves. And first of all, just to frame it all, what he says is, I cannot be anonymous to myself and love another. I cannot be anonymous to myself and love another. Somehow our loving actually comes out of self, and we have to know self in order to do it. And he talks about how important it is to recover a true sense of ourselves. And most of how we know ourselves is in relationship to someone or something. I am my mother's daughter. In Maine, where I've gone there all my life in summers, I'm my brother's sister. For some of us, maybe I played on this team. Or for some of us, I cheer for this team. Or I work in this place. And of course, these relationships, to the degree that they affirm us, or maybe don't, they carry great power in assigning us our identity. And then, of course, in knowing who we are, there are just those undeniable facts about ourselves. Apparently, Abraham Lincoln used to say, "God could have made me a handsome man, but he didn't." You know, just those limitations and gifts and maybe even injuries, things that happen to us, they're just what they are. And we have to do the best that we can with them. But beyond all this, deep in you and me, there is, beyond our virtues and our failings, there is a unique, in the image of God, me. Your parents had something to do with you being in this world, but it was God's desire that you are here. How do I get to know the me who is beyond my virtues and my failings? The me that this world can't take from me. The world that no AI can take from me. The me that is, in the words of the psalmist, wonderfully and fearfully made. Reverently made. The physical reality of me. How can I relate to this me with the sort of goodwill that such a one, created out of love in the image of God, ought to be treated? Because that is not narcissism or selfishness. That is self-love, which Thurman, I think, correctly identifies as really the foundation for us loving him and one another. So I'm just going to let you all ponder this, maybe over brunch. Who am I beyond my virtues and my failings? And we will get back to the story. Moses is wrestling with his identity in the presence of the living God, and specifically, he's wrestling with his worthiness or his ability to undertake what God has laid out for him. But now it is God's turn to reveal God's identity and self-generated calling. I mean, nobody's calling God. God's calling God out of himself. Well, God lets Moses know that he is now standing on holy ground, utterly set apart space. This little area puts Moses in a place that cuts him free from all the petty constraints of the limited and sometimes grubby world. He's entered a different category of space where he can relate to God freely because God is the creator of all categories. And God gives some background information. I'm the God of your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And of course, Moses knew of God's dealings with them and the promises that he had made to them and their offspring. And then God says that he has seen and heard and known the sufferings of the Jewish people of Moses' people, and God says that he has come down to deliver them and bring them up to a good land flowing with milk and honey. You know, when you see this, it should seem like a preview of what we hear in the gospel, what we even heard whispered about in this morning's gospel, of God coming down and delivering and bringing up. Now, all these terms that God uses are relational terms, terms that describe God's orientation towards his people. But then there's the moment in the conversation with Moses, while he's still sort of equivocating about if he can actually do it, and he says, "Who will I tell the people is sending me when they ask, 'What is his name? What shall I say?'" And God answers, "I am who I am." In Hebrew, it would be Yahweh, which is just a form of the verb to be, but in reverence to the holiness of God, Jewish people never pronounce the full name in Hebrew. "I am who I am. That is my name." Now, there is an identity that is not relative or conditional, not relative to anyone or anything, even time. There is an identity that is simply the origin of all that is, an identity that operates in perfect freedom. There is an identity that belongs to God alone. And yet, out of his perfect freedom, God chooses relationship with Moses, and he chooses relationship with you and with me. And it's the most committed relationship. "I'll be with you," says God to Moses, and that settles it. Moses says, "I'll go." But you know, as I imagine it, I give Moses so much credit for having said yes to God, because there was so much less that he actually knew about God than we do. He heard God say that he had come down, but Moses did not know that God would literally come down as an infant, a vulnerable Jewish boy in a hostile world. Very much like Moses, of course, except God did it by choice. He did not know that God, in Jesus, would literally walk with people, or that he would suffer the fullest extent of human suffering on the cross for them. In the gospel reading, we had Jesus walking with the disciples, and Peter saying, "Don't do it, don't do it," and Jesus says, "Get thee behind me, Satan." This is the calling and the identity of God, to do what I'm about to do. That he would place himself in such a vulnerable place based on his commitment to himself, to his identity, which the gospel names. God's identity is love. Identity and calling. There's just this great priority for us to take the time from all the distractions of this world, actually to receive the gift of our beautiful identity. And you know, I gotta be honest, for a long time I sort of thought, stop, you know, I don't wanna do that. I mean, that sort of sounds like self-help, you know. How silly me. It is a precious gift that God has given us in our creation, and his love in our creation, and it is so valuable. It is a treasure. So, receiving the gift of our identity, the deepest me, the one who is beyond my virtues and my failings. And why so important? Because an anonymous me cannot love, cannot respond in fearless love to the God who calls us into relationship with himself and with others.